have 21 cases in the country as of yesterday, and we're still in the containment phase, which means, according to the WHO and EU guidance, that we're trying to stop the infection coming into the country, and if it does come into the country, trying to stop it spreading. That's why when we identify someone with a case, we identify their contacts, depending on are they close or casual contacts, we ask them to isolate and monitor and report to us if they get any infection. We test them then. If they have any symptoms, we test them then. If they're casual contacts, they just keep an eye on themselves and call us if they're sick. That's what we're trying to do to make sure this infection doesn't spread throughout the country, so we keep it contained for the moment.
Now, obviously, there are viruses doing the rounds, the cold, the flu, or what have you. I mean, what should people be feeling before they ring their GP or the ED or whatever the best advice is in that regard now?
Yes, it's a good point you raise, Greg, that it is a viral infection. We're still in the viral infection season. People use the flu, and whether it's the real flu or the man flu. With coronavirus, what we're seeing is people have a sore throat, a bit of a dry cough, a shortness of breath. So very mild symptoms. Some of them have a temperature. A small number then can go on to have more severe flu-like symptoms. So if you have those symptoms, and particularly if you've been travelling overseas in the high-risk areas, or if you've to get on the phone and contact your GP, do not go to the GP turn-up. Talk to the GP, and the GP will assess you. The GP might say, no, it's not. We don't think it's coronavirus. And they say, maybe we should get you tested, and that'll be arranged. Or they might say, you sound like you're bad, and we'll see you in controlled circumstances, or you're bad enough to go straight to hospital. So don't go near a healthcare facility, be it your GP or an emergency department in the hospitals, until you have phoned someone. The idea being that if you're unfortunate enough to have it, you don't spread it to other people.
Now, we'd be inundated, either me personally or just generally people ringing the station saying, are there people in isolation in Letterkenny University Hospital, for an example, or are people being tested there? And I understand there is a section of the ED that has been cordoned off, so to speak. Why is that? And this is creating panic, and I think some people are very anxious and panicking in any case. What would be the logical reason for not discussing those situations and then only discussing, you know, properly tested and confirmed cases?
Well, we want to reassure people that we're doing what we have to do. We don't want to get a state of panic. As you know, we have identified the general areas where there are cases throughout the country. That's information is given out every day by the Department of Health. But there are situations where people are tested for various reasons. They've travelled, their contacts, etc., etc. And it would be incorrect for us to give specifics of that and create a sense of panic around situations. But if where there is a case, we will identify in general that there is a case, we will identify the people who are contacts of that case, and we will manage those contacts appropriately, as we have done over the last 2 weeks. So if you need to be contacted and identified, that will happen. If you won't, if you don't need to be identified, if you're not at risk, you will not be contacted.
Now, who's calling the shots? Who's making the decisions? Because anyone I speak to from within, be it GPs or other professors, doctors, etc., they all cannot understand why there are still four or five flights a day coming in and out of Italy into Ireland, and that we are still, albeit it seems inevitable, we will cancel St. Patrick's Day parades, that we're not even, you know, those decisions aren't being made now. Have we not learned lessons from how various countries have reacted to this, to know that these are not conversations we should even be happening? If it were up to medical professionals, in my opinion, these decisions would already have been made. So effectively, who is calling the shots?
Well, this is a public health issue, Greg, and in Ireland, like other elsewhere in Europe, we're taking a lead from the WHO and the European Disease Control Centre, and we're trying to take the most logical, appropriate approach. And the information we get from the WHO and the EU feeds into the National Public Health Emergency Team, which contains representatives from the Department of Health, public health specialists, HPSC, the hospital side, etc., and they assess the information that they're getting and we're getting from the WHO and Europe, what's happening in other countries, look at what's happening in this country, and they make the appropriate decisions. They will make them for the best public benefit, to make sure we contain the infection.
And is their only consideration health?
Oh, yes, it has to be. It has to be.
Mm-hmm. Now, and just in terms of the cases that we do know about and are confirmed at this stage, can we take any encouragement that we don't have an awful lot of diagnosed community cases, that the cases that we have can be traced back to travel or personal contact, or do we just take that as good news for now ahead of the inevitable?
Well, it is very good at present. We don't know how the situation is developing, and we're touching lots of wood to make sure we can it continues in a manageable fashion. But it is encouraging, you say, Greg, that people who have been abroad or in contact with a case, etc., they have followed the advice of identifying themselves when they develop symptoms. Their GPs and hospital doctors have identified them if they've been caring for them. We've got the testing done very quickly. We've identified the contacts, and we've managed the contacts appropriately, be it isolation and monitoring, or keep going on working if you're a casual contact. And unfortunately, we have a very, very small number of community origin cases, but the vast majority of cases have come from sort of known sources, be they of original contacts of original cases, are people who've been abroad in high-risk areas. So that is encouraging so far, yes.
How often do we need to be washing our hands?
Very frequently. There's two aspects to this for the general public and health professionals and everything else. It's washing your hands and general respiratory etiquette in terms of if you have the cough or sniffles, to use a tissue, to wash your hands if after you cough or sneeze, to wash your hands on a regular basis. If you're sitting at your desk there now, and then let's say you go out and get a coffee, in theory you should be washing your hands before you get the coffee. If you make yourself lunch there or whatever, wash your hands before and after lunch. And obviously people wash their hands when they use the bathroom, etc. So just to get into the habit of doing that.
What about spacing in public areas now?
Say that again, sorry.
You know, social spacing, I don't know what they call it. Is that what they call it? I mean, should we be, with as much as we can, spending less than 15 minutes in each other's company? Should we be allowing, when we're walking down the street, a certain amount of space between ourselves?
We're not at that stage where we need to do that at present. I think the thing is, carry on life as normal. Be sensible. If you have symptoms that are bad symptoms and you need to stay at home, you stay at home. If you have mild symptoms, you get out and about, the respiratory etiquette, wash your hands. If you have a cold, bad cold, try not to pass it on to someone who's might be at risk, as the elderly or someone who's sick, etc. That's a sort of sensible approach at this stage.
Just in relation to that, what should people be doing if they have an older relative or someone who has underlying health issues? You know, maybe they might live alone. We have an awful lot of rural isolation, for instance, indeed, in this county, Dr. Breslin, as you know. People might feel like they're damned if they do and they're damned if they don't. Do they continue to visit their elderly neighbours?
Yes, visit them as normal, but be sensible. If you have a cold, heavy cold, etc., you shouldn't be visiting your neighbour. And hopefully that'll blow over, and then once that's blown over, you can go and visit your neighbour. It's that sort of sensible approach. Horses for courses in this week of gentlemen.
I'm just trying to get a sense of the coverage, if that's okay, Dr. Breslin. And you don't have to answer any of these questions, but I'm trying to reflect what I think people might be thinking when they're listening, okay? Front of the Irish Sun today, we have Professor Sam McConkie saying almost 2 million Irish people would contract coronavirus. This is a few different sources being conflated here. I think this is going to be a transformation of our society. Now, for people who have anxiety and suffer with anxiety, they already will be thinking they have some of the symptoms that we're talking about, because that's how anxiety can often work. And they're reading articles like that, and it is you know, potentially incredibly damaging for people's mental health. Is that appropriate, that kind of stuff? Is it accurate? Should we be realistic about it? Or should I listen to you? Because I'm listening to you, Dr. Bredesen, and I know I have to be careful and I know I have to be civic-minded in how I behave myself, but I listen to you and I'm less worried.
Okay, we have to balance providing information, but providing correct information, but also provide reassurance that things are happening. And we're trying, to, for instance, to stop the infection getting into the country. If it does, identify it and manage the contacts. We're trying to say to people, you can do your bit in terms of managing your coughs and colds, etc., washing your hands. We know that it's a new virus. We know that it's similar to flu, but it's not as infectious as flu. We know that a new virus, like we had in the pandemic back in 2009, at the most, it could affect about 40% of the population. Vast majority of those will have mild infection. A smaller number will have serious infection, and a smaller number will require hospital care. And we're trying to plan for that so we can have capacity for that. So we're not saying we're trying to make sure it doesn't happen or it doesn't happen to a big extent. We're trying to or plan for the worst and hope for the best. The 40% is what we think could be the highest hit rate. It could be lower than that. As I said, the vast majority will be mild disease. But we're trying to put a perspective on that so that people know what the situation is. And then when they're given advice, they can take and act on that advice appropriately.
Obviously, get you and I appreciate it. Dr. Bredesen, now obviously people are talking about beds and the health system isn't really beds, it's people really, isn't it? And, you know, in terms of dealing with this situation, like a lot of people may require to be on, have oxygen support or ventilators. I mean, do we have those ventilators in this country to the number that we may require? And if we don't, how do we source them? Presumably, every country in the world's looking for them.
Well, there are plans in place being activated at the moment to increase our capacity, and we will have that in place. And yes, we have to watch to make sure not just the physical beds, but as you make a good point there, Greg, of we need the staff. And that's why we're making sure staff take the advice as well that were given to the public. They look after themselves, they monitor themselves. If they feel they're getting symptoms, they report that to their OC Health, their line manager. They're sent away, they're tested, whatever's appropriate. And if they are conscious of the case, they're managed correctly so we can get them back into the front line as soon as possible. And we do require a large number of staff to work on this, and the goodwill and the cooperation, and we're getting that. And even over the last 2 weeks, the last 3 weeks, the amount of cooperation in the Northwest from practice, the GPs, the practice nurses, the admin staff, people in the emergency departments, in the hospital wards, in the labs, etc., it has been phenomenal, and I think we will continue to get that. But people have to watch themselves in terms of the infection, but also have to watch themselves in terms of getting burnout as well, just watching how they work. But I'm confident we'll be in a position to manage the situation if it does get more severe.
Indeed. Say, just for the likes of SMEs listening, you know, even you could use Highland Radio, I suppose, as an example in terms of we're in a building here. You know, there's close contact among staff all the time. If one person were to be diagnosed with this virus, does that mean all their close contacts at work would be expected to self-isolate at home?
It would depend. Now, there is very good advice on the HSC website and the website of the Health Protection Surveillance Centre. It gives it for how we manage contacts and advice for the work place, the general workplace and the health workplace. So that advice is there. Basically, if the situation was unfortunate that you did have someone there, we would come in and speak to the person about the work situation. We'd come to we'd get on to the work situation and ask them, is it an open plan office? Is it separate offices? Is it people working in cubicles, etc.? And go down a risk assessment like that and say, right, those four people should be self-isolating and we monitor them. Those people, they're casual contacts, they can carry on work, just watch their, if they develop symptoms and contact public health, and the other six people, we don't need to worry about them at present. That's the sort of approach we would take in that situation.
Okay. Do you think, like, what, maybe that's the job of the media, but, you know, we are on an island and the cases in the north would be more sort of perhaps relevant to us than cases in Cork and Dublin. I wonder, you know, would it be helpful if north and south this was combined and it was sort of in terms of public information, if it was combined effort, or is that not really practical and not really on the wider scale of things too important?
No, we have phenomenal cooperation between the Public Health Agency and the Health Service of the North and the Public Health Departments in the Republic, and the border departments between ourselves in the Northwest and the Northeast have even more levels of cooperation with our colleagues in the North. You have different health structures, the slight differences there, the NHS versus the HSE here. So there are subtle differences that you could give out phenomenally detailed information, but the same basic information in terms of reporting symptoms, identifying the symptoms, what to do with them, phone your GP, phone the emergency department, the respiratory etiquette, the washing your hands, etc. That is a very common message that people can get, whether they're listening to you, yourselves or your other colleagues in downtown radio, or et cetera, et cetera. The same basic message there. There will be slight differences in terms of approach. For instance, I know from the media reports in the north, some hospitals are doing sort of a drop-in clinics where you can drive up to the door. We're not doing that. We have the ambulance services going out and doing testing where appropriate. So there are small, subtle differences. So we have to, unfortunately, keep a separate message. But the overall sort of headline messages from the north and from down on, down south, the headline messages are the same, and people should follow the headline messages.
If I were your son, would you advise me against going to pubs and nightclubs for a while and football matches and stuff?
At present, no.
Even if I was your son, Anthony.
No. At present, no. We don't have any rationale for doing that at present. There is, you have some committees, we know from the media recent this morning, meeting this morning and looking at the
parades and stuff,
advice
yeah.
on public gatherings, etc. There's no reason for changing our behaviour at present. As long as people wash their hands and use their tissues, etc., etc. If they do that, that's fine. If the situation changes, it changes, and we'll deal with that down the line.
Okay, and just very finally, underlying health conditions, what are they? Like, a caller has a cough most of the year, gets the odd chest infection. Is that an underlying health condition?
It's hard to know on that, and I don't want to get into...
So you can't... Okay, it's individual then, is it?
I don't want to disadvantage them and give them advice. But generally, it's the usual... We're using the same criteria we would for the influenza vaccine, for instance.
Okay, yeah.
The over 65, people with asthma, pregnant women, diabetes, chronic coronary disease, cardiac disease, chronic respiratory conditions, people on immunosuppressive drugs or immunosuppressed, the usual,
yes,
the usual range.
Smoking and vapors, are they disadvantaged?
Smoking is always a disadvantage. The vapors, the jury's out there and on the telecom.
We'll not get that one into
that
one
today. I don't want to get into that area.
Yeah, I get you. All right, then. Listen, thanks very much, Dr. Anthony Breslin. I appreciate it greatly.